Hello, beautiful soul. Welcome to the Elevate Your Soul podcast. Today, I interview men's coach, conscious comedian, professional educator, and entertainer, Jordan Bowditch, all the way from Austin, Texas. Together, we discuss how to find your tribe, the importance of bromance, and how to cultivate deep and meaningful friendships in your life. We also touch on topics such as relationships, travel, social culture, reliability, and so much more. I absolutely had so much fun interviewing Jordan. I hope to get him on the podcast again. You can find Jordan on Instagram at conscious.bro or check out his YouTube channel at Kinda Conscious. If you want, you can also watch this podcast interview on my YouTube channel at youtube.com/elevateyoursoul. And if you have a minute, it would really help me out if you could leave a 5-star rating and write a little review. It really helps get this podcast out there. I hope you guys enjoy this podcast episode. Hello, Jordan. Welcome to the Elevate Your Soul podcast.
Woohoo! Hey. That was weird.
Hey. First question I have for you is, what elevates your soul?
Oh, we're just going to go right into it. Okay.
Yeah. That's
my first question. What elevates my soul? Yeah, the first thing that came up is play. Play elevates my soul. And with that comes a whole host of awesomeness, fun, laughter. Like, one of the most important qualities for me in friendship and connection is humor.
Yeah.
So play is a big part of that.
Oh my God. So good. Yes. I love being around people who make me laugh, and indeed, I try to make them laugh too. And if I don't, then I just laugh at myself. That's so fun sometimes.
And you still win.
Exactly. Can you tell us a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Oh, yes. How much time you got? Because I could take hours.
3 minutes.
Okay, 3 minutes and 33 seconds to keep it like ultra spiritual.
Oh, ultra spiritual, yes.
Come on. Yeah. I don't know if you can see the shirt. Spiritual as hell. Yeah. I'm in it. Dressed in press. Dressed the part. Let's see. So I was born in Southern California, raised mostly in Ohio in like my adolescence, but spent summers back in California with most of my family that lived there. And I grew up in two very different worlds. And California was pretty like cookie cutter Christian influences. And that was like my dad slash a lot of my family there, pastors of a charismatic church. My grandparents were like, I'm talking slain in the spirit, speaking in tongues, holy laughter, interpretive dance, like very flamboyant, vibrant. And I have leveraged a lot of that energy in like my life up to this point currently. I think that's a great influence in most ways. Yeah. And then in Ohio, single mom, not around a whole lot, always felt very loved, but very absent. Partying, friends and boyfriends and substances were kind of more important than being a mother. And at times that was like difficult, but overall, I was the house where people had most of their first times doing things.
Right.
That was, again, cool in a lot of ways, and I wouldn't change any of it, and probably not so good in many ways.
Right. Did you ever feel like you wish your mother was stricter on you or took more care of you?
Totally.
Yeah.
I don't know about stricter per se, just more attentive. Like, example, I was fucking terrified of the dark most of my upbringing. I remember up until age like 12, sleeping in my brother's room a lot, bathroom light on.
But
and actually currently at 32, still do not like the dark. definitely there was some shame in that too, for sure. Like, not feeling like my parents were never involved in any extracurriculars, like didn't go to most of my sports activities and things like that. And I definitely hated that. I felt like awkward, ashamed, and like that kid at times. So those are some elements. And then beyond that, moved back to California my freshman year of high school full-time, whereas again, I was spending summers before that. And major culture shock going from a small town in Ohio where I more or less knew most people, was cool, like just had things dialed in as much as a 14-year-old can. Mm-hmm. And then I go from, again, this small town to Orange County, where there's like 3,000 plus kids in my school. G'd up from the feet up, wearing like FUBU jorts, Lugs boots, big ass silver chain with a cross, and bleached tips and shit. Like I was, that was like the Midwest kind of style. And I get to this kind of skater, surfer scenario. And needless to say, I did not quite fit in the very beginning.
Right.
Basketball was a big part of my upbringing, still is. I play like 3-4 times a week and played all throughout high school. And that was kind of where I got in with the cool crowd, you could say, in high school.
Right. Yeah.
And had a Happens really awesome.
Happens when you move to LA.
Yeah, right? Basically. Yeah.
You get up with cool people. Yeah. Famous all of a sudden. I'm trying my hardest here in New Zealand. I'm like, I don't want to move to LA, but I mean, all the way in New Zealand.
Yeah. I mean, Los Angeles is great. I lived there for a few years, and a lot of people, you know, don't have a great experience for whatever reason, traffic or they just, I really enjoyed it. And there's definitely elements I didn't like so much.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was kind of, I would say generally speaking, yes.
Yeah. I feel like introverts are less inclined to want to live there, and extroverts kind of vibrate, like blossom there a little bit more. Yeah.
That totally makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. And now what keeps you busy?
What keeps me busy now? So I get lots of play. I love my dogs. I have my pit bull tattooed on my leg. That's how much I love my boy. Aww. His name's Biggie James Smalls. He's my right-hand man.
Yeah.
My firstborn dog son pup. And I'm really into like biohacking, fitness, nutrition. I was one of the early employees for a brand called Bulletproof, which probably a lot of people are familiar with, like the coffee.
Yep.
I am also a professional edutainer. And that is probably what keeps me most busy and what I'm most lit up by nowadays is entertaining and educating through that process. Mm-hmm. And that's my brand, Kinda Conscious, is where a lot of that comes out.
What's it called?
Kinda Conscious.
Kinda Conscious.
Just kinda.
I love, just kinda. Mm-hmm. And you're based in Austin, Texas?
Austin, Texas. Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Yes, ma'am. And you've done some work with JP Spears?
I have. This is actually his brand's shirt, and he's my best friend, the officiant of my wedding next year as well.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. I like that connection there. Yeah, I was excited about that. I didn't realize until after we booked the interview, and then I looked at your page and I was like, oh wow, cool, he's connected.
He's had a massive influence on my trajectory with the comedy stuff and
courageously
stepping into that more, for sure.
Cool. I love that. I love that. So now let's dive into the talk about friendships, finding your tribe, romance, community.
Yes.
I'd love to ask, have you ever had a period in your life, in the upbringing in Ohio or when you moved to California, where you didn't feel like you had any friends or at least any close friends?
I mean, the short answer is yes. And in particular, moving from Ohio to California, freshman year of high school, for sure. That was, I remember like the first couple weeks in particular, I would walk around during lunch by myself and eat my lunch as I was walking. So I was so just like insecure and terrified to be by myself. So I was always pretending like I was doing something.
That's so interesting. I spent some, at one of the schools I went to, it was kind of the age 13. I was in middle school in Canada, and then we moved to New Zealand for 2 years. And I wasn't even in middle school. I was in my last year of like primary, elementary school. And then they threw me to New Zealand, or flew me, not threw me, but, and then I landed in the first year of high school here, just because of like the age difference and the way they do schooling here is a little bit different. So it was a really big shock, because I went from like boys have cooties to like girls sleeping with people, girls, girls smoking, girls high school, super catty. And I would like, the first year, I don't really know what I did. I was kind of a loser, because they were like, oh, you're from America. Do you know Britney Spears? Or like just like that, because they were so young. And then eventually I felt so isolated there. I started eating lunches in the bathroom, like sitting on the toilet stall. So it definitely had my share of like feeling completely alone and not having any friends. So I relate with like the, like you're eating lunch and you don't really have anyone to sit with. So you're just like walking around like, no, I'm not a loner. I'm just
not really even a little busy. Bit. Exactly. I'm cool.
Yeah. I promise. To the other end of the school. So exactly. I'm really busy.
Very important business. There might be some shit going down over there. I need to check it out.
Exactly.
Yeah. So that's definitely a time that marked that feeling of like loner, not having friends. And once again, as I joined the basketball team, that's when things really opened up. And I would say that to that point, activities, and in particular when we're talking about bromance, competition and games and collaboration and team sports, those group flow states have very much been a massive contributor to like my connection with people in general, but in particular men.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting. So yeah, I was going to ask, like, what did you do to make friends and find your tribe? You just joined activities and you found people through there?
Yeah, and that was more high school. And then there's certainly other elements. My high school experience ended up being really awesome, especially like junior, senior year, just a lot of fun in Orange County. There's just a lot to do. And within like a 1 mile radius, there's like five high schools. So there's just so much. And in college, what really probably the single most influential aspect of my life up to this point, if I had to pinpoint like one thing, it was joining a fraternity at San Diego State in Southern California. Mm-hmm. And that's, I mean, talk about rites of passage, initiations, brotherhood, both, you know, positive masculinity and certainly plenty of toxic masculinity.
Yeah.
A lot of training and all of that there for sure.
Wow. I thought that only like existed in the movies.
many do, but it is a real thing.
Oh, that's funny. And now what would you say, you found your tribe now, right?
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's certainly shifted throughout the years. Like seasons of life just depends on where I'm at and where people around me are at. But the tribe that I have now is like, these are going to be people that are co-parenting my children kind of vibes.
Yeah.
And actually just a few hours before this call, I was on a group call with my like core tribe that is exploring co-housing. So like community living, buying a piece of land in the greater Austin area and like going all in on life together. And so that's high stakes and it feels good.
Wow. That's incredible. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's always been hard for me to have the quantity of those quality friends. So I've had like periods of my life where I had like one really, really, really best friend. And we'd have sleepovers together and we'd make videos together and we'd hang out in school after school, blah, blah, blah. But it's been hard for me to like my whole life, because I moved quite a lot too. I was like involuntary as a kid. My parents always moved me around and stuff. And then after high school, I was a bit confused about what I'm doing on this planet as well. So I kind of just like floated around, and it was always really hard for me to, I guess, manifest and like attract people who were I would like to say vibrating on my frequency, because I've always like, I don't know, I've had a lot of toxic friendships and toxic relationships, and I know that has to do with your frequency. So I always have to deal with some stuff that I dealt with. But then even then, I just feel like hearing your story, you moved a lot as a kid and then you moved to a new town and then you joined basketball and you like had great friends. And like a part of me is like, oh, he makes this sound so easy. And like, I have a good friendships now in Auckland and New Zealand. But like, for example, I was in Wellington for 5 years before I moved here 2 years ago. And for 5 years in Wellington, like I never found my tribe. And maybe it was partially the universe being like, well, you're not meant to be here, go somewhere else. But then at the same time, I just feel like that's always been a struggle of mine. And maybe it's because I'm a fairy mermaid and an alien. But I'd love to ask, like, what do you think are like the key factors to manifesting people who can like be part of your tribe? And like reliable people and people who are open and vulnerable and will love you and things like that.
That is the $1 million question. We'll see if we can dissect that a bit. I certainly have some things that have really worked for me and I've seen work for others. And just speaking to the point around like being in Wellington, I have no idea what Wellington's like, but that just brings a point of like where you actually are physically, like geographically, makes a difference. And just a quick example, I have a quarterly men's group called Manifestation, capital M-A-N, Manifestation. And we have a few guys in there that in particular, these like three guys struggling also with like deep friendship. Now we cultivate this incredible brotherhood in this virtual setting with this group, but you know, there's no substitute for in-person stuff. It can complement it, but like the in-person is so important, so potent. And they all live in like, one of them lives in a small town in New Jersey. Another one, like the outskirts of Washington, D.C. And so those are just two examples. They don't, and another one lives in like New Orleans, and like some places are easier than others, depending on like what you most appreciate, enjoy, desire in connection and friendship. So I would say the first, one of the first places to start is like, where do you believe that the cultural fit is for you? For some people, Los Angeles is perfect for that. And it also can depend on the season of life you're in. For me, San Diego and Los Angeles and certain seasons were perfect for me. And this season, Austin. And for the foreseeable future, but who the fuck knows, right? That could totally change. So that's definitely one big one, is the geographic location.
If I can add, I love that you're saying this, because I think I've always had a bit of a hard time accepting that, because when I was little and I was struggling making friends in that girls' high school I was in, I would always tell my mom, like, I want to move back to Canada. I had friends there. You know, you took me out of school and I was really enjoying school at the time. And she always said, like, look, the problem's you. Like, it's not about where you are. There are people everywhere that you can make friends with. And it's kind of like, I like it because it's like an abundant mindset. Like, yeah, you'll find your tribe anywhere. It doesn't really matter. But only, it's so funny we're doing this podcast right now, because I just had a talk with my friend who's living here from the States, and they're leaving because it's kind of the same issue. They feel like they can't really, I don't know, find their tribe here. And they were saying as well to me, like, it might be where you're located on this planet. And I just have a hard time accepting that, because I'm like, oh, but I like New Zealand. And I feel like there are all sorts of people from all walks of life everywhere. But I'm starting to feel that that is my truth, and that is, it is my calling to leave New Zealand, at least for a while. And I am, my soul is like so pushing me and is in love with San Diego.
It's beautiful. It's special.
Yeah. It's like, I went there and my soul was just singing. And then like, when I flew back to New Zealand, I was like, no. And then I flew back like 3 weeks later after being in San Diego and New Zealand. Three weeks later, I like went back to San Diego for 10 days because I just couldn't get enough. And then I had no money left, so I couldn't go again. But there was this pull there, and I didn't meet anyone necessarily as like as a best friend material right now, but I did meet some really fascinating people in that really short time I was there. That took a long time to meet. In the years I was in Wellington.
So I would say there's some wonderful wisdom to what your mama said, right? Like, yes, because anywhere you go, there you are. And if there's a problem, it's you, which is a quote that I've heard, right? That's so confronting, but there's just so much truth to it. And more than one thing can be true. So the geographic thing, it's one aspect. It's one thing to strongly consider in the equation of wanting to find like your ultimate, deepest tribe. Another element, and this probably more than anything has been the single greatest catalyst, and it is going to events. And sort of a, I guess, a cousin to that, or under the same umbrella, is joining activities and groups. So again, fraternity being an example, basketball being an example, many other clubs of sorts out there. But bringing it back to the events, I first went to this event called Tribe Design, International Tribe Design. And there are retreats that are still happening here and there. The kind of heyday has passed, so to speak. But there were a few years where I was going to these as an attendee, the first few, and then became a facilitator, and then even like a co-founder for a season. And core concepts were like radical honesty and some of the things that you and I were talking about, Vic, going into this conversation, a lot of tools I learned that helped me more strongly attract the tribe that I most want, and equally as strongly repel the people I didn't want in my life.
That's interesting.
And it's a radical way to live, and it can be really fun, comfortable. It's very polarizing, but it's, yeah, I wouldn't have it any other way. And the types of people that were outgoing, courageous seekers of sorts were also going to the same kind of events. And so, for example, JP, met him there. And so like, I can't imagine not having met him. So many other people that are going to be at my wedding and it'll be figures throughout my life.
What was this event called?
Tribe Design.
Tribe Design. And right. I think we're, what you're talking about globally before, that might have something to do with it as well. Because like, if I knew of an alcohol-free, drug-free weekly meetup or dance club or even just a bar or something like that, I would be going there. But I feel like it's not often enough where there are these events because I don't drink and I don't do drugs, and I prefer to be close with people who also don't do the same. So it's like hard to find those people when all the events are involved around alcohol.
Many are, I would say, right? Yeah. And I guess using this Tribe Design as example,
yeah,
not explicitly drug and alcohol free per se, but like, there's no, like, I wasn't going there and getting fucked up the whole time. Yeah, yeah. Some people were like drinking beers at night after everything, but like it was such deep work.
Yeah.
It's like, there's not really time to be fucking around like that, you know?
Yeah.
And just generally, because that's the vibe, it's, you're not attracting people that are like heavy partiers and whatnot. Yeah. So like an example, right?
Yeah.
And several other events, certainly there's even like the Landmarks of the World and things like that, that are also great. And I would say those also the tools, once again, that I learned in those settings just helped me be more clear on who I most wanted to be. And then naturally,
what were one of those tools that you learned? Can you share one with us? That really helped.
Yeah, maybe one of the single biggest ones, and it's so practical, is speaking from first person perspective and experience, using I statements. Mm-hmm. And let me give you a little example here. So, being in a group setting, maybe like a share circle of sorts, or even doesn't even have to be that, it can be more casual than that. But have you ever heard someone talking and they're like, you know, when you're just feeling down and just life's not going your way, and like it feels like the world is against you, and I'm hearing this, and before I was privy to this kind of thing, I'm hearing, wait a second, you're saying you, as in you're not owning your experience, you're not using I statements, and all of a sudden you're like taking me into your experience, and that doesn't resonate with me. The way you're describing and saying you, and sometimes we, right? We's another one. You know, when we do this and we do that, it's like, fuck you, don't wee wee all over me. Like, put your wee wee away. I'm not a part of that. And so once I started recognizing that, certainly in others, but even more importantly, like self using I statements, everything changed. How I saw the world, how I was perceived in the world, and just showed up in the world. Big
difference. You mean like saying
ownership?
I'm feeling right now, or yesterday, I was feeling really crap after blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
Yeah.
And just like owning radical ownership of all of my experiences. And it's a way more potent way to relate to people because it's experience that, like, if you have an experience that you're describing, then I can potentially at least sympathize, maybe empathize, and connect with you in a deeper way because you're owning your experience.
Yeah.
Rather than like projecting authentic. It onto me. Yeah.
And totally. Vulnerable.
Yeah. Yeah. And another tool I would say that's a really potent one also is separating subjective thoughts and experiences with objective reality. And so, and some of this stuff I got from a really rad book called Radical Honesty by Brad Blanton. Oh, it's such a great book.
I've heard of that. Yeah.
Yeah. I would say like one of the most potent foundational personal development books, and it's super entertaining. It's this guy who's from the South, like the Georgia area. And he's got this draw to him. If you listen to it on Audible, it's so good. Cause he's like slipping up over his words and goes off script and is like got a fucking potty mouth. He's dropping F bombs and stuff all over the place. And so it's just very refreshing and like feels very authentic.
Yeah.
But one of the many things that he has in this book is using, again, the objective versus the subjective. So for example, I notice you have red hair. So mm-hmm. objectively, I notice you have red hair. I imagine you like that style. This is a very generic example, but maybe, maybe and even like to take it a step further. I notice you have a nose ring and I imagine that fits
into
edgy persona. Well, it fits, I imagine it fits into the edgy persona that you want to project.
Right. Yeah.
So, so again, it's separating like something that could be objective fact from like my subjective interpretation of that, my imagination. Yeah. So those kind of like hacks, so I can see the world through a different lens and people can receive me in that way. That's been really potent.
Interesting. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Cool. And can we talk a bit about brotherhood?
Yeah.
Romance.
We can talk a lot of bit about it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. A lot of it about it. Let's do it.
Yeah. So kind of coming back to the fraternity experience, that was my first structured setting for shared initiations, rites of passage, really intentional brotherhood. Mm. And so to paint a picture a little bit, I lived in a fraternity house with 44 other 18 to 21 year old men. I use that term men loosely because 18 to 21, you're still kind of boys becoming men. And this very much like facilitated that process in some regards. And 150 active members total. So, you know, 100 plus are not even living in the fraternity, managing about $250,000 budget per year. Throwing massive parties that are very involved with setup, like building structures, transforming the house, maintaining a pledge program where a new round of men are being initiated and going through a very challenging, I would say military boot camp-esque semester long experience where little sleep, very physically taxing, very emotionally, mentally, all those kind of things. That and philanthropy, fundraising, like learning so many elements of life, of business, and doing it as young men alongside other young men and learning how to live in like a cohesive setting and having those shared experiences was priceless. And so I learned brotherhood in that setting. And again, incredible in many regards. And there's a lot of bullshit there. Heavy drinking was definitely a thing. That culture was just present, as well as just drugs in general. A lot of like shadow and toxicity around relating to women and just like the sort of game and the pride around fucking chicks and stuff like that. And just the competition and
it's classic college behavior, right?
Totally. And so for the people that are a little bit more aware, they could take the good in with the bad and sort of filter it out and continue on their journey and take with them the more light stuff that serves them.
You did?
Yeah, more or less. Certainly plenty of the stuff stayed and I worked through it and I'm still working through it.
Right.
My path to being an enlightened being.
Yeah. Kind of conscious. And
exactly. And I would say to take it to the physical component. And again, this is, I'm speaking more so for men right now.
Yeah.
Having, and I'll give another even more recent example. So we went on like a weekend getaway trip with like a dozen of my closest couples friends here in Austin. Yeah. And we were hanging at Lake Travis here in Austin, Texas. And we started to recognize, acknowledge that on each one of these trips that we do, which we do them around once a month or so, we are always aware of some sort of physical shared initiation experience, an opportunity to present itself. So on this particular day, we were at this lake and there was a pretty nice distance between one end of the lake and the other.
Yeah.
And we're like, what if we swam across that and raced? And on the one hand, it's kind of stupid because none of us were very strong swimmers and, but we're all capable enough and we know that we have grit, like because we've done this kind of thing enough in our lives, like we are physically capable enough. And while it's going to be very difficult, we're going to get through it and we're going to support each other through that challenge. Mm-hmm. And we did it. And I got about halfway, all of us got about halfway to the first side. And I remember thinking, oh shit, maybe I bit off a little bit more than I could chew. And that you could feel, it was palpable in the air that everybody was feeling that.
Yeah.
But it's like, because we're in it together and we have, again, that bromentum, that growth mindset, we made it to the other side and we're like, all right, this is no longer a competition of who's going to win. This is like a cooperative collaboration, making sure we all make it to the other side safely and live to talk about it.
Yeah.
So we took a little break. We pumped each other up.
And it was just boys then who crossed?
It was. It was just us, just like five guys.
Okay.
And made it to the other side. And that's something that we look back on and we so cherish. And I feel like a better, more capable man, more confident, and way more connected to them. Yeah. And JP was one of those people along with a couple other people.
So cool.
And so yeah, those shared initiations.
You have to send me a photo of Blake.
Yeah, it's, I mean, in total, it's probably at least around a half a mile, which swimming a half a mile is no joke.
Which, like, okay, for me, like, how long did that take you? Because I know you weren't like racing swimming, but how long did that take to cross?
So it was about 10 minutes of actual swimming each way. So a little over 20 minutes total of nonstop swimming without the break.
I would have joined you for that.
Come on. There she is.
I'm a mermaid, so that would have been fun for me. Awesome. Awesome. And what has your experience been like with making close, reliable girlfriends that are purely platonic friendships?
Yeah. Yeah. Ooh, that's such a relevant question right now for me in my life.
Okay.
And I would say that it certainly helps having a partner. So I recently got engaged and
nice. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. And she's a sex coach. So she is very open-minded and we have we call it a monogamish relationship. So it's like we are committed to one another and, but we are also very open to sensuality and to connection with people of the other sex outside of our relationship.
Intimacy, right? And intimacy, then whatever, however that naturally unfolds, you're open to that. And you're not like, I'm going to leave you if you.
Totally. And we have open communication around that and we have explicit boundaries and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so it gives us a sandbox to be able to play in like some of those boundaries, right?
Exactly.
And before this relationship, like my kind of main grown-up relationship, college sweetheart of like 5.5 years, we didn't have that kind of a relationship and not really any fault, or I should say equally my fault as well as hers, where it was just, I was afraid of being friends with a woman that I was attracted to. Cause I didn't know how to manage that. I was like, if I want to frankly, like sleep with this woman, like if I have that feeling, that energy, like how can I be legitimate friends? Like those are just opposing forces. That was my thought back then.
Okay.
And through continuing to do the work and even like reading things like The Way of the Superior Man, David Data, incredible work and other amazing teachers, I've completely like reframed my relationship to women in general and in particular women that I may be attracted to and have more look at that through the lens of like, wow, what a beautiful like aspect of the universe, this like feminine woman who embodies these qualities that are so attractive on so many levels. And seeing more of that in my partner, I can appreciate it more in other women and I can feel safe to have those relationships because I trust myself and I trust my partner. And then the X factor is going to be that woman or those women. Do I have trust that they have my best interest in mind and like having a like platonic, so to speak, relationship and honoring my partnership with Y woman. And so that's a dance that is continuing to unfold. And again, I'm so grateful that in my current community of like really committed, conscious couples, like we all share that. And we're pushing some of those edges of like sensuality and intimacy, but in a way that is very safe, that is very connective, that is very communicative. Yeah, it's pretty incredible.
Yeah. That's really cool. For me, I have like the opposite. If I have a guy friend and I end up finding him attractive, I trust myself fully. But then I'm like, what about them? Like,
I get it.
But it's usually, it's usually fine. But what I like to do, the older I get, like the more I like waiting for anything. Like, I love intimacy, but physical intimacy, I'm putting the brakes on so much the older I get. I'm afraid, like, one day I just won't have sex anymore because I just want to wait for, like, ever now. And, but that really helps when I do have a guy friend and I start finding him attractive, because then I just, like, I'm like, well, just wait, even though I think it would be someone I could be in a relationship, just, like, be friends with them for a year. Like, this is what I mean by, like, slow, like, just keep being friends with them for a year, get to know them better, and then, because that'll make, like, a better connection anyway, if you do decide to go that way. It's like, what a powerful relationship if you guys were friends for 2 years before.
Sure.
You know so much about each other. You showed each other sides that usually takes, like, a while or is quite scary to show when you're in a relationship versus a friendship. Mm-hmm. And yeah, like, it's just,
can I play some angels advocate?
And then sometimes those feelings go away. Do you ever have that? Where you're like, and that's kind of why I do it, is because I've, like, I don't like that feeling of, like, regret, like, ooh, I shouldn't have done that. And then, like, when I was younger, having guy friends that I, like, right initially when I started getting attracted to them, they're like, yeah, I'm down to fuck, of course. Like, so you're like, sweet, let's do this. And then after, like, one or two times, you're like, oh my God, why did I do that? Like, I don't find them attractive at all anymore. Like, all of a sudden it's gone. So I'm, like, learning as well, like, just wait, because even when I'm friends with someone for 2 years, maybe 6 months out of those 2 years, I was attracted to them sexually and I didn't do anything, but then it kind of just naturally went away. And then you're kind of like, oh, thank God I didn't ruin, like, thank God I didn't sacrifice the friendship, because one of us might've not been emotionally capable if something did happen to continue a friendship. So I just wait it off. Now I'm just like,
so yeah. Much like a theme that's emerged in this conversation a bit is, I don't think there's any right or wrong way to do many things. And what you just described, I think it is one way, and that people have experienced to be successful. And maybe in a season it is, and then you come to another season and point in your life and you're like, okay, I'm ready to step into a different way of approaching this.
Yeah.
And I would just quickly play a little angel's advocate to what you just described, because we're angels up in here, not devils, but we can be devils too. And my partner, I know, you feel like you got a little bit of both in you. So my partner, my fiance, I met her on Facebook through just, like, mutual friends, and I'll spare you the long story. It's fucking beautiful and I'm really proud of it. I documented the whole thing on, like, Facebook Live, and it's just really cool unfolding of a love story that a lot of people got to be a part of, just, like, followers and friends and whatnot. And I had this feeling, and I think, and to bring it back to maybe some of the masculinity stuff and the difference, or one difference that there can often be between men and women, is I saw something that I wanted. And that I wanted not from a conquering perspective, but from, like, a deep desire. And I felt this energy that, like, I never felt. And I was like, I need to strike while the iron's hot. Like, I want to capitalize on this opportunity, because this is a potent babeski that is a hot commodity. And if I don't act, someone else will. And as they should kind of a thing.
Yeah.
And so within a few weeks of, like, making initial contact with her, and I sent her a voice note on Facebook is how I first made contact. I did a little freestyle rap.
And I love that.
Just a little freestyle rap.
Yeah.
And hopped on a FaceTime date, like, the next week, and had four or five. And I flew from San Diego to meet her in person for the first time in New Orleans.
Wow.
3 weeks after first talking to her. And that same weekend, I told her I loved her. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, a really, like, scary thing to do. It's like, oh, that's, you don't do that. Like, that's way over the top and you'll scare her away, or that's, like, creepy or whatever stories want to come up there. Yeah, exactly. Right.
Yeah.
And I mean, I would say anti-game can be the best game, just, like, full authenticity.
Yeah,
exactly. And had I not just, like, boldly gone for it like that and just owned what I was feeling and experiencing, that might have fizzled. Like, it might have just never happened. And again, I think from a man's perspective, especially a woman like you who's saying, like, I want to take it slow. If I were an eligible bachelor and I was feeling, like, an attraction to you and I wanted to explore that, I would be assertive about that. Like I would own that and allow you to have your experience. And if that means like keeping me at bay for a little while and making me work for it to some degree, awesome. I think that's a beautiful part of the game.
Yeah. So I wouldn't say it's the game. I don't have a game, but,
and that's why I'm like, the
but game. In terms of like, that's what I mean. Like I love intimacy. I love being courageous. So for example, you're in Austin, Texas. If I really liked you, I would just be like, cool, we'll do like one or two calls or FaceTime. Uh-huh. And I'll be like, I'll come fly to see you from New Zealand. Like I would actually do that. But then once I'm in Texas, I wouldn't be like, hey, let's get down and dirty. Mm-hmm. I would just like want to be intimate with you pretty much on every other level other than sex or physical intimacy. Mm-hmm. And I would like savor that till later. But I am like super touchy. It's not that I like have an issue like with my guy friends, with people I don't really know, I'm always like touching them on the hand, like, hey, how are you? Always giving people hugs. So it's not like an intimacy issue. It's just like that to me.
That next layer.
I only make love. I don't have sex. So I need to like love you and feel emotionally safe with you and emotionally connected and all that stuff. And that's, as I said, that's just me. But I am super impulsive where like I will meet someone online, like, in a place where I never would have wanted to travel to. And I'll be like, I'm going to come see you because I think you're awesome. Like,
that's great. I love that.
I will do that. Mm-hmm. I have done that many times. Yeah.
That's great. I love that.
And then going back to the friendship thing, as you said, mm-hmm. how like maybe I'm just going through a phase and maybe one day I'll go through another phase and I'll just be like, oh, I'm attracted to this friend, but I'll just go for it. Actually, when you were saying that, a huge part has to do with it is their emotional intelligence. So if definitely. I sense that I'm friends with someone and they're not like kind of conscious.
Uh-huh. At least just kind of.
They're not like making a daily effort to evolve themselves or become more conscious. Like if they're not meditating every morning or listen to podcasts or, you know, on that wave, and then I don't feel they're emotionally intelligent, that also kind of stops me because I'm like, I don't know if they'd have the capability to be like, hey, you want to fuck around for 3 months and then continue to be really great friends for the next 3 years. Sure. Like it is, I've had friendships ruined like that because I fall in with the feeling and I do get impulsive and then sure. something happens and then it's kind of like, oh damn, that guy doesn't even want to like hang out anymore. What happened? And you're like, oh, right. Let me not do that again with, yeah.
Yep. So. Yeah. There's some deep cultural conditioning and programming that it takes some time to get through. And I think the people that are on that path, it is a righteous one and difficult AF at times.
Totally. Totally. I love what you have with your fiance though, monogamish. I love mm-hmm. monogamish and I really love monogamish and I love poly as well. Mm-hmm. I would consider, I don't like labeling at all, but I would consider myself more on the poly because mm-hmm. I like the system of like one and then another one, whereas monogamish is like one and then scattered. And I like, sure. I don't like scattered. I'm very like just one and then done. Mm-hmm. And touching on bromance one more time, so
yep.
for you now, for like, I know it in the Kiwi culture for men, it's like it's very conservative. It's very like, if you were to give a long hug to your other guy friend, like if two guys were to have a hug and it would go on for more than 1 second, both guys would be like, what the fuck is happening? This is so awkward. How do you, what does it look like with your friends, with the trust and the honesty and the vulnerability you have? Like, are you able to, I don't know, like in what ways are you open and vulnerable with each other and how you connect with each other, obviously in a non-sexual way, but like, how do you, when you say bromance, what does that mean to you? Just for people who don't know what that looks like.
Sure. It can look many different ways, more specifically to the physical affection that you just described. Yeah. And this is a journey, right? I think I was like many men, dare I say most, where hugging was like, yeah, a second or two at the most. It's like a quick hug, yeah, but a pat on the back and then like get the fuck away kind of a yeah, thing, you know? And then I would say that going to some of the retreats, like what I described, and just men that were a little bit more courageous, a little more open, a little more vulnerable. It was just like getting slowly exposed and having others sort of lead the way for me. And like, I'll even share, there's one activity that I got from somebody and put my own little twist on. I call it oxytocin overload.
Okay.
And oh, I so like recommend anybody who's a facilitator just wants to try this with a group of friends that are feeling, you know, bold and willing to try something. Right. And yeah, you can do this with a group of just men, just women, men and women, doesn't matter. Yeah. But you take the group and you split them in two. So group A and group B. Say there's 10 people in the group. You can do it with 50. It doesn't matter the number, but we'll just say there's 10. Mm-hmm. So there's five on each side. Group A closes their eyes and has their hands open in a receptive, like you could say, feminine state. Group B is going to approach every person in group A and hug them. Mm-hmm. And like a deep, intimate hug that has no specified time limit, but yeah, there is like an understanding, like this is going to be a legit hug, yeah, but the person that's receiving the hug is going to have their eyes closed. Yeah. So they don't know who it's coming from. They yeah, don't know if it's a man. They don't know if it's a woman. They don't know yeah, if it's somebody they know or don't know. It's just like, it's impartial, so to speak, like that. And so they hug every person in that group. And once they're done, they go back and now they are the receivers. So they close their eyes and now the ones that were just receiving the hugs are the hug givers. And so you do this and depending on how many people you have, it can be, again, oxytocin overload or O2 for short. You are high AF on your own supply of oxytocin. Mm-hmm. And again, because there's that like closing of the eyes and not knowing who it's coming from, it's really special. And that probably that single activity was the one that really opened me up to experiencing more of that physical affection and intimacy with men and feeling not only okay with that, but like loving it, appreciating like what it feels like to hold and be held by a strong, like aware man.
Yeah.
And for that to be what it is and nothing more. Like, yeah, and I know certainly for me, like my culture growing up was like, oh, are you gay? Or like, you know, things yeah, like that, that were like yeah, condescending or like, oh, you had to be like a strong man and just silly stuff like that, that serves no purpose. Mm-hmm. So that's just one very like practical activity. Now it may not be so easy to like just walk into a friend group and do something like that. But I think it can be done. And if you're courageous enough to just like try, great on you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. To be honest, I did look at your Instagram and like, I had a look through your photos and there was one photo where I was like, oh, is he bisexual or is he gay? Because you were just in like rainbow colors and
you're that was a Burning Man.
Up, and mm-hmm, he was like holding you. And I was like, oh, that's pretty cute. And I was like, initially I saw a couple of videos with you two and I was like, oh, they're like best buddies. And then I saw that photo. I was like, oh, maybe they're together. And then I scrolled down a little bit further and then you're like proposing to a female and I was like, oh, okay. But there was that initial like, and that's why I liked it. I was like, oh, cool. He's like comfortable with his guy friends enough to also be public about it, mm-hmm, to just like post a picture like that online and be like, fuck it, whoever can think whatever, you know, yep, like, this guy's my best buddy. So that was really, mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah. And one more thing I'll say to like, and this is just a more general concept for men that are just wanting to be on a path of like deeper connection to both men and women. And this applies to everybody, but it's a philosophy of sorts that has served me very well. And it's, you'll always regret what you didn't do. Mm-hmm. And if you let that sink in for a minute, it's funny because something you said earlier was on some level opposing that. But again, it's just, you got to check in with yourself and trust yourself and let this speak to you however it will. Yeah. I find that oftentimes, or I should say sometimes, I'll do something and be like, shit, I wish I wouldn't have done that. And I'll regret it.
Yeah.
However, yeah, more often living in the what if, regretting mm-hmm, what I didn't do, like, man, what if I would have had that split second of amazing courage and done that thing? Okay. What if I had said that vulnerable thing to a bro friend of mine when knowing that what's most personal is often most universal? And when I open up that energy and lead the charge, especially with men, and give them the permission to do the same, like that opens up some energy that is real fun to play with and deeply connective.
Oh yeah. I have a lot of those lately with like short-term ones, like regrets, like just today as well, I was walking out the gym and I looked at a guy, I saw him from the back of the head and he had really like a really cool hairstyle. And in my head, I was like, fuck, that's a cool hairstyle. And I kept walking and I was like, I should tell him it's a cool hairstyle. But then my other brain was like, yeah, but you're already two steps away from him and you're walking in this direction. And then I kept walking that direction and I'm like, but I should tell him because maybe he'll like really like it. I'll make his day. But I'm like, yeah, but now I'm five steps away and I'm closer to my car and he's in the other direction. And I was just like, fuck it. And I turned around. I was like, I really like your hair.
So good. That's a perfect example. Like I can so relate. And I'm sure everyone can relate on some level to that exact type of scenario. Yeah. Imagine if everybody were to say, fuck it, and just say that thing or do that thing when there's no bad outcome, especially if you're not attached, you know, to a certain outcome of them, like acknowledging it. Oh, and you just are like knowing that you are giving a gift to someone and whether they receive it or not, that's on them. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's like some world healing kind of shit right there.
Yeah, I've definitely had that as well. It's like, sometimes it's almost worse. Compliments are worse taken from other women, from me. I'll be like, oh my God, I love your dress. And they'll just be like,
y'all women are a finicky
like,
bunch.
Away, like, ugh, don't talk to me. I don't know you. I'm like, sorry. I just really like your dress.
But right, you can be at peace with that. Because like, how do they receive it? Like, that's their shit.
No, exactly. And that was like a little conversation I need to have in my head as well. I was like, oh, like one time out of four or one time out of five, a girl will really not take a compliment well and it'll make me feel stupid. But I'm like, that's my choice to feel stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, take it. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Awesome. Awesome. Do you have anything else to add today about finding your tribe or even relationships? If you just want to throw something out there that you learned recently.
Oh, there's so many things. You know, I would say that underscoring one thing that I said just recently is a split second of amazing courage can change everything.
Yeah.
And imagine like if you were to just once a day, dare I say twice or even a few times a day, mm-hmm. done that thing. And it's as simple as sending a voice note to somebody, a loved one, right? Or a woman that you're attracted to and you're like, just like, fuck it. I'm just gonna like give her an authentic compliment and not be attached to turning into anything. Those can make, if you did a lifetime of that, they can make a massive difference. And then the other thing I would say is like, if you're wanting to find deep community and tribe, go to an event. And I know it's shit, it's hard, like in the modern day, it's like, a lot of those things are not happening, but they're happening. So like you can find them. And if you gotta do the virtual thing, cool. Join a group, do a virtual men's group, do like I mentioned my manifestation thing that I do quarterly. It's so fun. It's so connective. The guys have become best friends and have never met in person.
Yeah.
Because it's just like a container that facilitates that kind of connection. So whatever it looks like, commit to something. Again, if we're talking in the context of men with men, like do something like that and you can't lose.
Yeah. I love that. How long have you been doing that for?
So I've been doing it for this particular manifestation of the men's group has been about a year, but I've been doing these kinds of men's group for the better part of a decade now.
Awesome. Awesome. And do you host your own podcast?
I do not. It's definitely been something that's on my radar, but I haven't gone there yet.
Channel though?
I do. Kinda Conscious.
Kinda Conscious on YouTube and Kinda Conscious on Instagram too, right?
Yeah. And then my personal, that's like my brand one with my co-founder. And then my personal one is at conscious.bro.
At conscious.bro. On Instagram. That's your Instagram username.
Correct. Yep.
Yeah. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Awesome. Thank you so much. I'll put those in the show notes as well. People want to find
cool.
them.
Cool.
Thank you so much for joining me all the way
Thank
from Austin,
having me.
Texas. Mm-hmm. Thank this you so much. Fun.